Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. Hopefully we'll have some others join us. I see some people calling in, dialing in right now, so you haven't missed anything yet. Hello and welcome. This is the third, or actually the fourth, I should say, and final session of the 2012 NEWH Green Voice Webinar Series. My name is Dina Belong. I'm the Vice President of Sustainable Hospitality for NEWH, and our group has assembled the sessions being held yesterday and today, and we've had a great lineup. We've had some really good speakers. Hopefully everybody's enjoyed it. During this session, if you have any questions, please type them into the comments area. At the end of the session, the speakers will be able to address those questions. Now, I'm going to introduce to you Ken Koenig and Adrian Pumphrey. Adrian is the global head of Adobe Eco Hotels and Suites. Their idea is that not all green hotels are equal. This revolutionary and innovative brand was launched on Earth Day of 2010, and Adrian is going to tell us a lot about things that Adobe is doing and the huge leap forward in responsible architecture and development. We also have Ken Koenig, who's the Public Affairs Manager at Valley Forge. Ken is responsible for implementing the company-wide sustainability initiatives and being the face of Valley Forge. As you can see, he's got a great face. Ken's goals include developing a sustainable, healthy, successful company culture, and Ken is also a LEED accredited professional, and he's going to be telling us today about processes that Valley Forge has gone through to gain their marketing leadership role in sustainable manufacturing. And I introduced myself a little already. I am also the sustainable specialist at the Peabody Orlando, and I work here with a single focus to achieve the highest level of sustainability in hotel operations. So this is going to be an open panel discussion, different than the three presentations that you've seen already if you've been logged on. This will be more conversational, so hopefully you'll enjoy that. We're going to start out with some questions for Ken and Adrian to get the conversation started. I'll start with Ken. Ken, can you give us some examples of how Valley Forge has approached sustainable efforts and how it's evolving, maybe from a green purchasing or waste management perspective?
Absolutely. And first, I'd just like to have a little shout-out to Jeff Lazar, who I am standing in for today. Jeff is a great friend of mine, and he had some back surgery, so I'm happy to fill in and talk about Valley Forge. But I would like to talk a little bit about JLF and Jeff Lazar first, because those of you on the call, if you've never seen his operation, he actually, I think, is one of the few, if not maybe the only, American furniture manufacturer that does all of his manufacturing in the U.S. And I think that's really remarkable, and my hat goes off to him, and I wish him a speedy recovery. In terms of Valley Forge, we, like Jeff, the owners of our company are have sustainability in their blood. Diana and Michael Dobin believe in it. It's part of who they are as people, and it has made it easy for us to implement sustainability throughout our organization. If you are trying to run sustainability from the middle or the bottom, it's not always as easy, and it doesn't always run as smooth. So we were very blessed to have owners or senior management that believed in sustainability as much as we all do. So our journey today is very different than it was about 8 years ago when we started. We looked at our entire operations. We looked at what we do internally, our supply chain, our factories, and we looked at everything and thought, how could we implement sustainability? How do we start? And we started with the low-hanging fruit. And certainly recycling and recycled content yarns were easy way to go. And 7, 8 years later, we've looked at all of those things, including involving third-party consultants who helped us take it to the next level and understand sustainability at a much bigger level. So today, we're doing things that we couldn't even think about 7, 8 years ago.
That's great. That's amazing. I know I've utilized some of the fresh product, so I can vouch for how great it is.
Yeah, we formed a team 7-8 years ago, and the fresh became our initiative, and then it also became our product line. And there was, I guess, about 10 of us that were on the team, and I was lucky enough to be part of that team. And we did a lot of research, and we found out really how bad it is out there. And we, all of us had various assignments, and we came back with all this data, and that thus began our journey. So Fresh became our product set too, and it's an acronym for Fabrics Redefining Environmental Standards for Hospitality. So today, over 50% of our running line items are fresh or have sustainable components to them.
That's great, and a mouthful.
Yeah.
I'm going to run a quick poll, and Nicole, maybe you could help me do that. Thank you. For everybody out there that's on the call, if you could answer this question, what do you think are the top drivers to implementing business sustainability practices in your company business model? And while everybody's answering that, I'm going to ask Adrian a question. What is sustainability to Adoba, referencing maybe people, planet, and profit? And what is the value proposition? Why do you do this?
Thank you, Dina. Appreciate that, and happy to be on the call today. It is the key focus. I think for us at Adoba, clearly none of us can pick up any kind of magazine or newspaper in this day and age without some kind of story about green campaigns or carbon footprints or the environment. And we sincerely believe that this is something much more than media hype. And our brand was completely developed with sustainability as being a key focus for a new way of doing business. And we use sustainability as our way of focus as creating a business model that is sustainable from ecological, our design, our architecture, our financials, our social point of view, and more so a culture that identifies strategies and practices that will help everyone on our team from the moment they're interested in joining the team all the way through their employment with us, learning new sustainable ways and working very hard to help drive shareholder value and owner value through sustainable practices.
That's great. It's such a really important part of making sustainability successful. It looks like we've gotten 5 responses, so everybody chime in. We've got some more people on the call, so we'll ask Ken another question. Ken, yours is a traditional business model that's really adopted a green approach, and this is an important management decision. How lean are you, and how are your employees reacting?
That is a great question. You know, in terms of lean, we deal with factories all over the world. About 50% of our production is in the U.S. and about 50% is overseas. We're trying to move as much as we possibly can domestically, but there are certain things that the overseas factories just do a better job of. And we, you know, we have a unique relationship with our factories because in almost all cases we create our designs and we purchase our yarns and we contract out the actual weaving of our fabrics. So the factories that we partner with, we do random inspections, often unannounced, to make sure, among other things, besides lean, you know, that their fair labor practices are up to our standards, that there's no violation of child labor policies around the world. So in addition to that, we know and we survey them and we know what their ISO certifications are and those types of things. So most of our factories are extremely efficient in terms of waste and water and electric usage. And one of our big partners, for example, that provides us our yarn supply for our Tencel Plus products is Lenzing in Austria. And their factory that produces the Tencel Plus product is almost 87% off-grid. So they're using almost no electricity from the power plant. So In terms of lean and being efficient, I can definitely say that most of our factories are there and as efficient as they possibly can be. In terms of employee engagement, that's a really awesome question. And as part of that third-party evaluation that we hired a company to evaluate us from a third-party perspective, and they surveyed all of our employees, and it was a confidential survey to see what the buy-in was. And the response rate was as high as 97% of our employees bought into what we were doing. They believed in it. It added value to their jobs. They felt like it made them part of something bigger, and it made us feel like we were part of something bigger than ourselves. And 97% contribution and employee engagement is huge. So from that perspective, we were thrilled, because you really don't know until you survey your employees what that's going to be.
That completely makes sense. It looks like we've gotten some good answers here on our survey. I'm going to read a couple of them. A couple of them are culture. The first two are culture, and I think we've talked about that as a group a little bit here, that culture is certainly central and really important, that you have buy-in both from leadership in your organization as well as, you know, all of the associates, everybody that works in the company, no matter how big it is. And there's also one here, cost versus competition, available resources to support. Demand from our customers, that's a great one. I know here at the Peabody, we certainly get quite a bit of commentary as a conference hotel. The Green Meeting Institute Council has implemented the APEX ASTM Green Meeting Standards, and so on the meeting side of the hospitality business, green and sustainability is probably stronger, I think, in my opinion, than it is in the tourism side of the business, though 30% of the consumer base says that sustainability is important to them when selecting a hotel, so it's certainly no slacker in tourism either. We've also got PMI, a purchasing agent for FF&E and construction materials. It's a top driver for them. Cost reduction, marketing, community engagement, and employee loyalty. That's a great point. I know you and I have talked about that before, Ken, about how employee retention is a big part of sustainability.
Yes, absolutely. And along the lines of what I said earlier, they believe in it. It adds value to what they do every day. And certainly where your office is and where you live and what municipalities are available in terms of recycling and proper disposal of items, we found here in South Florida that in Broward County and in the counties north and south of us, the recycling was often not good in places where our employees lived, and we allowed them to bring their recycling to work if it's not offered where they live. And you'd be amazed at what people bring in, and we also offer safe battery disposal and light bulb disposal, you know, things that you're just not supposed to send to a landfill. So that definitely helps and adds value, and I think our employees, it makes them feel good about that.
I think that's a great suggestion for people. There's a lot of areas still in the U.S. that struggle with recycling. And, you know, they may take paper and cardboard, but they don't take everything. So, you know, if you have a business and you have a larger volume, then you have the ability to demand a little more service from your waste management company.
Yes.
And can help provide some of those things. I have actually sent wine corks down to South Florida to your guys' office to have them recycled.
Awesome.
I know it works.
When we give tours, we show the wine cork barrel, and everyone's eyes open wide up, and they think that we drink all that wine. So, but I want to talk, if we could, Dina, for a second about the cost versus the competition, because I think that's an awesome point in sustainability. And when we, you know, one of the myths that I think still exists out there is that sustainable products cost more. And I'm sure in some cases they do. But when we first launch our products, we tried really hard to keep those margins low and to price these products in line with the non-sustainable products that we offer to dispel that myth. And then what happened was the Great Recession hit us. And truth be told, in hospitality, most of our customers' agenda changed with this great recession that we had. So sustainability, that myth, if it was there, it really got hammered in the recession because, you know, it became the issues that are important to us now are price and how quick can you deliver it. And it has to look fabulous and be in the colors and the texture I want. And those were people's issues. And then sustainability kind of got a little bit pushed to the side, truth be told. But, you know, I'm sure Adrian and you could speak to that, that there's lots of choices now for sustainable products. And that's helping drive the price down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. Adrian, one of the other people mentioned marketing is a large driver and asset value. Do you want to talk a little bit about how Adoba uses sustainability from a marketing perspective?
Absolutely. For us, and I think for many of us, the business case for sustainability is it's solid. Sustainability is more than simply meeting responsibility to society, it can create a significant competitive advantage. And when, in regard to sustainability as your business strategy, I mean, it enhances shared value for both your business and the society or the community in which you are operating in by delivering greater value and access as to capital, as well as really there's a stronger performance over time with a great deal of your credibility in your relationships within your community because you're giving back to your community, products that we're purchasing, and if they've went through a life cycle analysis, and to Ken's point, there still is a myth that design and products are more expensive, and that's not true. There's an emerging amount of amazing companies out there offering the right product, and Dean, I know you have many of them that you could speak to that helps. There may be a small increase with price in the beginning, which isn't always even true anymore, but the product outlives and there's a greater return on that product because it's being able to be used much longer in our particular case within the design of the guest rooms or the lobby.
Yeah, I think you're completely right, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I see Paul has chatted that developing sustainable projects or product does cost more. You have to define the new material and the new process, and I think in clarifying some of this conversation about cost is you have to look at the total cost of the life cycle of the product. So when we analyze, whether it be, you know, a fabric or a piece of furniture, or we're looking at doing an LED retrofit program, those kind of things, we're not looking at solely, is this light bulb more expensive than this light bulb? We're looking at the lifetime cost of that product. So you can do the same analyses on fabric. If we're using a high quality fabric and we've selected a design that isn't going to date itself quickly, then we may be able to extend the life of that product and gain in that process a little more equivalency to something that would technically up front be more expensive. Paul's mentioning that most customers don't look at it that way, and they look at installed cost only. And that's very true. And I have been a consultant in the past and an interior designer, licensed interior designer, and done design work. In many cases, as the consultant, I made those choices and really didn't talk to the client about it. We selected one material over another material, and we worked with the installation company and the freight contracts and things like that to bring those costs down so that the upfront, in essence, the upfront costs for something that we were really wanting to do, like if we wanted to use FSC certified wood, which we all know is more expensive on our case goods, then we would find other places and other areas in the budget to be able to design down a little bit so that we could get that in there. And again, so it's balancing. You may have a small incremental cost on a specific item, but when you look at a project as a whole and you look at an entire budget, you can wiggle money around a little bit, then you have the ability to make that make sense.
You know, to Paul's point, R&D costs money. And if you have executive management and ownership that believe in sustainability, then they're going to devote R&D money to sustainable products where they might devote it, you know, channel it other ways. But I'd like to use cotton as an example of a fiber that's been around, obviously, forever. And, you know, we had a couple years back where in China they really pushed up the price of cotton because they wanted to withhold it and stop providing it to international customers like us and sell it to their friends in China. So they very easily rose the price of cotton. It just skyrocketed. And then we were looking at other fibers like eucalyptus. And you look at an acre of cotton, a cotton farm with 1 acre of cotton, and that plant only grows, you know, 1 or 2 feet high. And then you look at a eucalyptus tree and 1 acre of eucalyptus trees, and those trees are 80 feet high. So while, yes, it may cost us more money to develop eucalyptus as a yarn, the net result is 10 times more fiber from that 1 acre of land than cotton. So I would argue that, yes, there are costs, upfront costs sometimes, but like to Dina's point, the end result is often much, much better and sustainable. And what's going to happen is as our population continues to grow and emerging markets like China and India and other places around the world, their middle classes grow, they all need the same products that we use every single day. So we need to start coming up with better ways to produce something from 1 acre of land, because if we don't, the generations that come after us are going to have a really tough time on our planet.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So our last comment was to the question, live what you preach, educate your staff. Adrian, you want to talk a little bit about how you do education at the Adoba Hotel?
That's perfect lead-in question. Thank you. And Kim mentioned it earlier with engagement. You know, I think for us it's important to gauge both the internal and the external stakeholder, whether it's the client or the owner, and identify ways how everyone can contribute. But it does start with engagement. And even before that step for us, what we have learned since our launch is really that's about how we handle it from even a job description to a one ad. I mean, we have found that attracting applicants who value sustainability can enhance the recruitment and the retention. They just have a stronger fit with the eco values of our organization, and they're more attracted to apply and learn, and they just seem to really want to help continue propel, because as we know, that every day there's some amazing processes in technology, in warehousing and supplying and design and architecture that's happening every day, and sustainability is becoming such a key word and such a key process of what I consider a really effective business model. There's a lot of people working on it, and it takes a lot of people to really help you stay on top of it. And in order to do that, we created what we call internally our Emerald Pack Committee, and that is a division that helps with employee training, employee development, and linking all that to compensations. I mean, employees can develop their understanding of and their commitment to the organization, but in order to really value our goals and our sustainable mission, we've got to continue with the training, the development that's happening, and building the awareness and giving them the skills that they need for any behavioral changes as new things emerge every day and helping us reduce our carbon footprint.
Yeah, I agree. Victoria has posted a comment. In addition to sustainable products, would you agree that particularly in large chains, corporations, each individual site should look at local products and suppliers for the individual site, and should it be tailored to that specific location? I know here at the Peabody, we're not a huge chain. We are a huge hotel, 1,640 rooms and 300,000 square feet of meeting space, and we have a second hotel that is in Memphis. It's the original hotel. And here inside our organization, we do look strongly to try to find local vendors and local manufacturers. In fact, we're working on an LED relamping program right now, and we have found a LED manufacturer, believe it or not, in the United States, about 40 miles east of our location. And so we're working with them. They do both manufacturing in Mexico and here in Brevard County. And we're working with them to work out the economics, because they, you know, honestly told us that the lighting is less expensive for them to manufacture in Mexico, that the actual lamps are. So we're talking to them about, you know, what is the total cost of the product? You know, what about the freight? What about warehousing? What about, you know, how much more quickly can we receive it? Can we get it in smaller shipments, easier for us to install, less labor, less storage for us? There's a we try to look at the whole system of a product that we're purchasing and say, because we're going to be replacing those lamps internally. That's going to be internal labor. Well, if labor, if somebody delivers me, you know, 400,000 lamps all at once, I don't have enough guys to get all that installed. So, you know, the nice thing is they literally come off the line in Brevard County. They can put them on a small truck, you know, once a week and drive them over to us. And we get them in phases that we can deal with. So there's a lot of different ways to look at things and kind of, a holistic approach. I think our slide that we have up is a great example of some of the topics when you're looking at kind of a whole hotel or a whole system or a whole process. We want to make sure we're hitting them all. I was going to go on to the topic of water conservation. Ken, do you want to jump on that at all?
Sure. I think from the factory perspective, water conservation is huge. And in terms of making products, I mean, let's face it, you need a lot of water. And in most product manufacturing, water is a component. We try to reuse and recycle water and use as often as we can non-toxic chemicals in the process, especially to break down the fiber and make it into yarn. There's lots of water that's used in those processes, so we try to reuse that water over and over again. And especially in the case of Tencel Plus, it's only a fraction of 0.04% actually we cannot use, but it's completely non-toxic and it can go into the ground and be totally unharmful to any living creature. So, but that's not true in all of textile manufacturing, and this is where I think our designer customers and architects on the call, our specifiers, can learn about certain products that they specify every single day, like rayon and nylon, and those fibers have very unfriendly environmental stories. They use lots of harmful chemicals and lots of water. So designers and our specifiers, our customers who are listening, can learn about different fibers and different products, you know, way beyond fabric, of course, and understand, well, who uses less water in their manufacturing process? Who uses healthier chemicals in their manufacturing process? And they can specify those products. They have the power to do that. And I think we can educate our customers, and that's a very important part of what we do. But it also, It's important that customers know that they have the power to make those specification decisions and learn about water usage and water conservation and who's doing it and who's not.
Excellent. Adrian, I know that you have at the Adoba in Rapid City, you guys have put in some low-flow fixtures. Are those working well? I know you've done it on a test floor, right?
We did it on a test floor. As a matter of fact, the metering comes back. We did it on a six-month, so we just end the six-month, September 30th, so we can really compare, working with the water company to compare the bills year over year, and we're able to break it down through our technology on that floor. So don't have a great number for you at this point, but we have seen a reduction in the bill, but we'd really like to kind of laser focus on where that exactly came from.
Yeah, and I know I saw the specification that you guys were using, and it is a truly, it's ultra low flow fixtures. They've put in a 1.0 toilet and a 1.5 shower head and a 0.5 faucet. So hopefully that means something to you guys, but those are really the cream of the crop, the ultra-low flow fixtures. So I think it'll be really interesting. We'll have to have another one of these sessions, and you'll have to tell us how it's worked. And have you gotten any guest complaints?
That's the key right there. And we, of course, we put together information because everyone wants to understand this building. Our first Adobe was a transition, not green from the ground up, which is always a little harder. And helping educate everyone on what the sustainable actions are that were happening. And that is one we're very proud of, the water conservation side of it. And not one single complaint as it related to the velocity or, you know, my flow wasn't, the velocity wasn't high enough. So we're very pleased with that.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can see up on the screen a case study. This is a property out on the West Coast. It's a W Hotel, and that went through a major conversion and was totally rebranded and everything. And the replacement guest toilets were the largest share of water savings on the chart. So it's really important, and that's very common. I see these charts a lot on how much water savings you're getting from different components in a hotel. So if you're really looking holistically at an entire hotel as a system, you can see where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck. The toilets, the guest showers, strangely, the ice machines. I know that's generally a very shocking one to people. Those ice machines take a lot of water, and they waste a lot of water because they have a lot of, particularly in Florida in humid climates, get a lot of condensation on them as well. Ozone laundry systems are another great place to do water conservation. The ice machines in the kitchen and things like that. So then it's all the rest of them are smaller. I think many engineers would be surprised at optimizing the cooling tower. Now this isn't a cooling tower replacement, an optimization of a cooling tower, but the small amount of water conservation that was gotten out of that from this particular case study. Let's move on to green purchasing. I know that was one of the topics that we wanted to discuss. Ken, maybe you can walk us through the Hospitality Sustainable Purchasing Consortium and what's going on with that.
Sure, would love to. We are, we were founding members along with about, 20 other manufacturers, architects, designers, and hotel brands. Marriott, namely, is also part of this group. So what the consortium simply is trying to do is provide a tool in purchasing so that customers can compare apples to apples. So in the fabric world, my competitors who are part of this consortium, we will be scored on a level playing field, which this has never happened. In the past, we've received over the years spreadsheets from the brands asking us to list our sustainability initiatives, and the spreadsheets were always different. You know, what Starwood sent us was different from Hilton, which was different from Marriott and so forth, and they were all asking for different things. And then we would spend lots of time completing these elaborate spreadsheets, and I'm not sure what was done on the brand side in terms of decisions that was made, if anything, in terms of sustainable purchasing. But what the consortium is doing for the first time is leveling that playing field so that they will be able to compare Valley Forge to Design Techs to P. Kaufman and look at our products, and they will be scored the same way. So this is being done through an organization called MindClick, and they have a wonderful reputation in other industries building the same kind of scoring platforms. They've done a lot in the automotive world, and I know they've worked for Toyota and AT&T and those brands. So they have built this platform, and we're all in beta testing now. So we've all provided them lots and lots of data on our CSR data, on our manufacturing data, on our employee engagement data, on our products, and they are scoring these things on a level playing field, which is really, really super exciting. So the purchasing decision makers, for the first time, can really compare apples to apples, and this is across all products in hospitality. So it's hoping to go live, I believe, by the end of the year, if not beginning of next year. And of course, it's open to people to join. And the more members we have, the better. The more products we have, the better. And it's really exciting, and we're really happy to be part of it.
That's great. It is a fabulous program, and I like that it's really focused on hospitality. The other two kind of definitions that we have up on the screen for you are probably some other places you can go about green purchasing and to talk about some what I was talking about earlier is really thinking about the entire cycle of a product, both from a cost perspective, but also you know, where does its raw material come from? How far away is it being responsibly sourced? Where is it being manufactured? What is the manufacturing process? What is the transportation requirement to your facility? How long is it stored? Are you buying it, you know, on demand? Once you've used it and it's at the end of its life, is it recyclable? If not, where does it go? What kind of chemicals does it have in it? What kind of issues is it going to have in water or land use? So really the entire cycle of a product. And then kind of the next level or the sister to life cycle analysis is the health product declaration. The HPD is somewhat new, and Building Green and the Healthy Building Network have both been integral in creating that. And it's basically trying to take a material safety data sheet. Hopefully everyone is accustomed to that. Some of the problems with material safety data sheets are manufacturers do not have to disclose everything on those sheets. So they can say that items are proprietary to them and they don't want to disclose them. So it hinders transparency. The health product declaration doesn't allow that. So the manufacturer has to disclose everything. And then if you go to the HPD working site, it's currently in its beta testing. It's really nice because it also will give you a score. So if you're looking for a paint product and you kind of will see multiple different products and multiple different manufacturers, and they'll give you a score in its toxicity and different categories about that product. So it's a really neat tool. Again, emerging, very similar to the consortium. It's kind of an emerging thing for us to keep an eye on and support as buyers and owners and designers and architects. We want to make sure that we're out there helping these initiatives move forward. thank you for answering on the shower head there, Adrian. Anybody that was interested, it's an amplifying shower head dual flow control from Delta. So a really nice shower head. I've actually seen it. It is a great shower head. Paul asked a question. Have you seen any pie charts like water conservation ones for HVAC usage before and after a refurb, and what elements are typically tracked? I would probably be the best one to answer that question, and the answer is no. I have seen one on a project where it was a fairly early phase. It had been in about 6 months from a mechanical renovation that had been done, and it was really trying to prove whether or not the projected savings that the engineers had planned was actually happening. And it did, so that was good news. But, you know, that's a great point, Paul. We probably need to do more of that with mechanical. I do know that statistically, it's never been all put in one place for me, but in gathering the information, lighting is generally considered about 26% of energy consumption in a building. And, you know, that's across different types of buildings, and so that can get kind of vague depending on, like, a hotel, lighting on a hotel is going to be fairly high, a big convention hotel like ours where we have lighting on 24 hours a day and it's a large amount of lighting. Traditionally, our electricity related to lighting will be higher. HVAC generally trends 50 to 60% of a building's energy cost. So it's definitely the biggest chunk, and then the remainder, you know, extraneous. And when I say HVAC, I'm including, you know, a number of pieces of equipment, which, and that's very vague because HVAC equipments are all different. So I'm not sure that was a really good answer for you, but the best one I got. Lisa is asking, can you tell – oh, I already read that one, sorry. Paul, Cool Daylight Consortium has one of the commercial buildings but never seen one for a hotel. Oh, great. So, Paul, maybe you can tell us who that is, the Daylight Consortium. That would be interesting to hear about. We have another poll. This is an easy one. You don't have to type a lot. Do you industry decision makers believe rankings, rate, and rates improve overall corporate sustainability performance? So, you know, do you think if it's a LEED certified hotel, or if it's Green Score, or if it's a product that's been certified by somebody, is that important? Does it matter to you? Or do you do your own research? So let's let everybody answer that poll, and while we're doing that, we'll move on to employee engagement. I know you talked about this a little bit already, Ken, but maybe you can delve into this topic a little.
Sure. You know, employee engagement is kind of a moving target, and we've surveyed our employees twice. And like your first point on your slide, we didn't make any assumptions. We wanted them to, first of all, feel like their answers would be confidential. We didn't know who said what, and we got all of their answers kind of in a giant pool. And it was really enlightening and interesting, and to know that our employees were so on board with sustainability. And we also, along those lines, don't make any assumptions, but also try to provide them education, because don't assume they really know what sustainability is. And we found this out as well. We really had to educate them. What does that mean? You know, what does that mean on an everyday basis, what we do at Valley Forge, what you do at home, and how you can have an impact? So not only do we survey them, but we train them and we educate them. First of all, we want them to know what we're doing with our products. Obviously, they need to understand how our products are made in an environmentally friendly way, what we're doing for our customers, Those are really important things. So we didn't want to assume that they understood what sustainability meant. So we make sure we educate them, and we have something called that Valley Forge Educational Series, and we make it a requirement that they have to attend classes one per quarter. And I always try to make sure that there's at least one sustainability class offered. They get to pick from 3 or 4 classes a month. But they have to take one per quarter. That's the minimum requirement. They can take as many as they want. So we want to educate them. We want to find out how they feel. And we found that sustainability is a personally rewarding thing for them. And it makes us happy as well that they feel that way. We want to make it easy. And one of Paul's, I think, questions earlier was, how do we make it fun? And we try to do that. You know, we try to do fun things on Earth Day. We try to do creative, clever ways. We offered a fresh award for employees to try to come up with creative ways to recycle or do things better in the office to save electricity, or to just come up with fun, different ways, things that we could do around the office on a daily basis that would be different and fun. And they like those kind of things. It's good for them. So, and they feel like they're contributing, and they're making positive suggestions to us. So those are, you know, I think that's about everything I can say on employee engagement. One of my first points was, it was, some things are mandatory because of the owners of our company and the executive management made certain things mandatory as far as recycling and paper and cans and bottles and plastic. I mean, that's mandatory in our building. And, you know, sometimes you wonder about how making things mandatory is going to affect engagement or morale. And it didn't. It didn't have any negative effect whatsoever. So I encourage people to educate, survey, and make it fun.
That's great. Adrian, I know sustainability is a core value to Adoba. How do you impart that upon all the associates at a hotel? I mean, you've got a lot of employees.
Yeah, and Ken makes a great – thank you, Dina. Ken makes a great point. I think as you go down further on the hierarchy of the ladder, sometimes you tend to see that maybe sustainability is less relevant than upper management. So it's really important to make sure that from – equal disciplines are receiving the same level of coaching and involvement. And one of the things that we were able to, and having been in the business for a very long time, like many of us on this call, the hotel industry is 24/7. You're constantly busy. You certainly have an expectation to be available for guests. But one of the things that we did was really take a look at our scheduling from the perspective of our sales and marketing and our back of the house and our food and beverage teams and their goals. We included in their goals to have employee enrichment for volunteering. So to enrich the work and experience, all associates have to participate in a local event for volunteering. And what we're finding is, you know, we have a lot of some of the individuals that aren't in upper management, that it's affording those associates an opportunity to get to know different organizational environments. They're immersing in new networking groups, and they're really having a great time. Earth Day was a great example, and they may not all be social events or socially responsible or sustainable events, but they're community events that we're volunteering our time with United Way or different organizations. And it's really helping all our associates better understand our mission. And honestly, I believe it's helping with improving their performance and their productivity.
That's fabulous. I know here at the Peabody, it's our 25th anniversary, and it was 2011. And so for the 25th anniversary, we created a goal to have 2,500 hours of volunteer work for employees, and that's paid for by the company. The company pays for the employees' hours that they're doing the volunteer work. And in the first 6 months of the program, we exceeded 4,200 hours already. So it really goes to show that people want to get out there and do things. And we do things from adopt a highway and clean up you know, the side of the road, to working with ASPCA, to packing, both donating product and packing backpacks for underprivileged kids at the beginning of school, just, you know, a whole bunch of different kinds of programs. So everybody has the ability to find something that works for them and that they're really interested in. Like, I'm a big animal person, so the ASPCA thing really is cool to me. And I happen to like the Adopt the Road thing because I feel like it's kind of environmental. I'm cleaning up trash and making sure it's not seeping into the earth and all that kind of stuff. So everybody's got their own things. I think that's important, too. With volunteer programs is, you know, not for the owner of the company to say, okay, well, this is what we're going to do, and everybody has to do this, but kind of give them an opportunity for different things.
I think it gives associates a performance with a purpose.
I love that phrase.
Yeah, it really does. They feel like when they come in, it's added it's for personal development, but it adds a purpose to their performance. It's more than, I'm in housekeeping from 9 to 5 cleaning 21 rooms today. Well, that's not the case because, hey, I'm doing this volunteer, or I'm building this team skills by working with United Way, and backpacking is one that we had completed also. So just the additional involvement in their community and working with a lot of nonprofit associations just exposed our associates just to things they may not have had an opportunity to be exposed to before.
That's fabulous. Just so everybody knows, Paul has posted a couple of links on the in the chat section if you're interested in the Daylight Consortium. And I wanted to mention on the PowerPoint slide, this has been a very open discussion, and I haven't mentioned actually what's up on the screen yet, which is the community-based social marketing. It's a wonderful teacher. He's what does he call himself? An environmental psychologist, which if that isn't a really, really specific job, I don't know what is. And he's a PhD, and he speaks on how to get beyond just attitudes and really change social norms in an organization. So I highly recommend to everybody on the call, write down that email address at the bottom, write down the link at the bottom of the page and check it out. It's a really, really wonderful way for anybody to engage. It's a good process to engage with. So I think we have hit recycling already, so we'll skip that section. And just to close, I want to ask just an open-ended question for you guys. What's the biggest challenge to sustainability efforts, and how have you overcome them? Ken, Adrian.
Okay, do you want me to take that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I said Ken or I. My apologies.
Were you reading the chat room?
I think initially our challenge was 7-8 years ago, we felt like if we built it in terms of products, they would come. And truth be told, that didn't really happen. And we changed our philosophy a little bit, and rather than dedicating full collections that are sustainable, we're now infusing sustainability in existing collections and brands that our customers know and love. And our goal is eventually, we have two goals. Eventually, we want to offer every single product that it has a sustainable component or is completely 100% sustainable. And eventually, we would like to have the technology that exists today to be able to recycle fabrics back into fabrics so we will no longer need raw materials to make our products. And that will be a perfect closed-loop system. And unfortunately, the challenge today is in technology and electricity and water, it's just not feasible to do that. And you also have most of our existing products are blends of fiber. So when you start blending fiber together, it becomes very difficult to recycle that product. And then when you add finishes to it, it becomes even more difficult. So our goal and our hope someday is to have that perfect, beautiful closed-loop system where we are not using raw materials and we are just using existing fabric and recycling it into new fabric.
Wow, that's a good goal. How about you, Adrian? Have you guys had anything that's been particularly challenging?
Several things. you know, specifically on the hotel side of it, this is the hospitality's been a little behind commercial and other industries. So there was that challenge that was mentioned earlier that ownership groups immediately thought if someone was bringing a LEED certified, a certified hotel concept to them, that there were going to be these ridiculous amount of fees that came with it, and could they wait out that ROI? So that's something we've been able to manage, and thanks to many organizations that's offering greater product. And developing a roadmap to sustainability was a little bit of a challenge because there hasn't been a clear one. Sometimes there's even still a little struggle in the definition of sustainability and creating a roadmap that helped us embark on our journey from different starting points, especially in this first project for us where you had a 30-year-old building that we want to become LEED certified. We just had some different endpoints and objectives in mind and how would we get that and then apply that to there was a great deal of associates that stayed on. So, you know, applying those sectors of sustainability and concept and in elements and design, it was a lot. But I think what's been helpful for us is really creating roles within the organization on sustainability and incorporating sustainability into everyone's job description, and it's a way of our organizational climate. And having a lot of discussion that sustainability is truly a business discipline now, and that, you know, it's something that we all have to master and factor into daily activities and decision-making process, because it's not been a daily decision-making process in the hospitality industry as customer service or other applications were. And technology has been a tremendous help with that, and we can only hope that technology will only help us further our mission in helping us benchmark and making it part of our daily process.
That's great. That's just amazing. Well, I hope everybody enjoyed the session. We did do a mix of different kinds of sessions, so we hope when you get the survey from us on what you liked and what you didn't, you'll let us know. And thank you to everybody who's attended all of the sessions through the last 2 days, and I hope you enjoy your evening. Any parting words, you guys?
Go green.
Yeah, green. Thank you so much, and appreciate the topic and being on the call, and hope you all can make it fun, too.
That was a great point. Make it fun. Sustainability can be fun. Thank you, everybody.
Great job. Bye-bye.